Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island Beer Company, a Chicago craft brewery that works to innovate new ways to brew and age beer. More at gooseisland.com. You don't need to be the only beer you drink. We just want to be the best beer you drink.
You're listening to Sound Opinions. Jim, we've got a jam-packed show today. We've got Jason Isbell in the studio for an interview and a live performance solo. And we are going to review the record that everybody's talking about, the Cardi B debut.
That's later in the show, Greg. But first, before you, before me, we've both been writing approximately since forever. Kendrick Lamar has won a Pulitzer Prize.
That's amazing, Jim. Everybody was somewhat stunned by this because there had never been any artist in the so-called pop vernacular, rock artist, hip-hop artist, soul artist, R&B artist, who has ever won a Pulitzer. And here comes Kendrick Lamar winning the first one, the first non-jazz, non-classical musician to win a Pulitzer for music composition.
The feeling of false freedom, a false freedom, the poison to fill them up in the prison. I feel like it's just me, look. I feel like I can't breathe, look. I feel like I can't sleep, look. I feel heartless often, often. Feeling the falling, I'm falling apart with darkest hours lost in. Feeling the void of being employed with balling. Streets is talking, filling the blanks with coffins. Fill up the banks with dollars.
Is this just the Pulitzer Committee trying to match the Nobel Prize committee giving a Nobel to Bob Dylan?
Yeah, I guess so. It's certainly doing a better job of recognizing genius than the Grammys are. How damn the record for which they recognized Kendrick Lamar, the Pulitzers did not win Grammy Album of the Year is magnified now.
Yes.
Even great to a greater degree.
Both of us named it among our top 10 albums of the year.
Oh, absolutely. And the fact that the Grammy snubbed it, I think, is even more egregious of an oversight now that the Pulitzers have weighed in. I mean, again, it is stunning that there had never been an artist in this realm who had won this award before, and Kendrick was the one. And I can't think of a more worthy choice, because I think Kendrick is one of those generationally redefining artists where we're going to measure the times that we live in by the music that he put out.
Kenny them. My resume is real enough for two millenniums. A better way to make a way, start defending them. I meditate and moderate all of my wins again. I'm hanging on the fence again. I'm always on your mind. I put my lyric and my lifeline on the line. And ain't no limit when I might shine, might grind. You rolling with it at the right time, right now. Only for the dollar sign.
And you know, I'd put him up there with the Beatles of his generation.
Yes.
You know, for this generation, that's who Kendrick Lamar is. And damn, you know, we could have an argument about which is the more Pulitzer-worthy record.
Yeah.
The case for To Pimp a Butterfly.
Yes.
Like, that's the best album.
They want to say it's a war outside, bomb in the street, gun in the hood, mob of police, rock on the corner with a line full of fiend and a bottle full of lean and a mother on a scheme. These days of frustration keep going to the front. Yeah, I duck these cold faces, post up, feed five off for basis. Dreams are reality's peace. Blow steam in the face of the beast.
That doesn't make damn any less worthy. It's just that he's got so much great art in his catalog that there's plenty of his albums that could have been recognized in this way.
Anxiety. Why am I never where I'm supposed to be? Even with my lover sleeping close to me, I'm wide awake.
That's a little bit of the song Anxiety from our guest today, Jason Isbell, one of the leading singer-songwriters of our time. A singer-songwriter almost does him an injustice because he's such a wide-ranging artist stylistically. He was born and raised in Alabama and started playing music as a kid. The big break came with the Drive-By Truckers. They hired him as a touring musician, a guitarist. He was a very fine guitar player, but also a really great songwriter.
Mm-hmm.
And the band recognized that, brought him into the fold. He was with them for three albums in the 2000s before leaving the band to start a solo career. He's now made six records. His latest is called The Nashville Sound with his band, The 400 Unit. That title's a little bit tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah.
He is not emblematic of what people think of as country music these days, the bro country sound. He's very much anti that. That album is extremely political. It's got songs talking about working class struggles and white privilege. That's where we started our conversation with Jason, who has said that his album is about more than just politics. It's also about beliefs and ethics.
Well, it's most certainly subjective, you know. What your politics are is a subjective term. If you're in prison and you're trying to get out, the rights of inmates are not your politics.
Right. Yeah. That's my everyday,
that's
every minute concern.
That's your breakfast and your lunch and your dinner and the time in between. So I think that's very often, you know, the term politics is used, I think, to make beliefs more manageable and even more compatible in a lot of ways. You know, it's hard to say you believe the wrong thing, sir.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's in your heart is wrong. You have a bad heart. But it's really easy to say I disagree with your politics. And very often when somebody says the latter, they mean the former. They're just not brave enough to say it out loud. And for me, I just wrote about where my mind was and what I was thinking about, what my life was like, what sort of role I was trying to find as a father and a husband and an artist. And, you know, I'm documenting this part of my life. And it came out political because, I mean, what else is there in the public consciousness right now if not that?
I know you're tired and you ain't sleeping well. Uninspired, likely mad as hell. But wherever you are, I hope the high road leads you home again to the world you want to live in.
When somebody puts out an album that's not political right now, if they're not just a straight-ahead entertainer, you know, period, and they put out an album that doesn't deal with those issues at all, I think that is more glaringly obvious to the audience or to the public than somebody who puts out an album that's quote-unquote politically motivated or politically charged. I think, you know, it's so ingrained in our everyday lives right now, that sort of push and pull and that battle for power that if somebody doesn't mention it on a record, you know, everybody goes, well, what the hell are you doing? Why aren't you talking about politics?
People hear political and they think of something abstract and like boring, and it's like, you know, why it's, you know, white and black, and it's
and that's privilege,
these lines. But, you know, when you get back to the idea of like what country music was, it was about talking about everyday lives and stuff that mattered to everyday people. And what I hear about on this record is a lot of songs that are about what everyday people go through. What does politics mean to that family that is trying to find a way to make ends meet when their jobs go away because the coal industry doesn't exist anymore, you know, in something like Cumberland Gap.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, you White Man's World is a great example of a song where you kind of call yourself out in some ways.
I'm a white man looking in a black man's eyes, wishing I'd never been one of the guys who pretended not to hear another white man's joke.
Was that a difficult song to write?
It was. You know, I mean, they're all hard to write if they're any good, in all honesty. But that one was, you know, you got to be real careful, man, when you're talking about that stuff. You got to be real careful that you come out exactly how you mean to. And I found in that particular song the best way for me to do that was to give my own personal experience, which, you know, that's usually the best way to tell anybody anything or move them from one side of the aisle to the other is well, here's what happened to me. Take it or leave it, you know.
Mm.
And yeah, I grew up in a place where a lot of people that were around me used racial slurs on a daily basis and, you know, made racial jokes. And I didn't always stand up against that. And now as an adult, I regret it. You know, I look back and think, well, no, there wasn't anybody around who, you know, was the butt of the joke. I mean, it was a bunch of white kids, you know, in a field somewhere or in a bar somewhere shooting pool or something. But I still should have said something because it wasn't right. And so that when I give the listener that, you know, it's not as preachy. It's not like I'm saying, you know, you need to behave this way. You know, it's kind of like, here's what happened to me, and here's why it kind of keeps me up at night every once in a while. You know, I mean, it's not like I'm planning on changing anybody's mind, but if I'm going to get anywhere closer to making any kind of an impact with any of these songs, the best way to do it is just say, you know, here's my story. Here's what's worked for me and what hasn't.
Mm-hmm. We've got Jason Isbell in the studio with us at Sound Opinions. And Jason, you've got a fine-looking acoustic guitar.
Thank you very much.
Would you like to play a song for us?
I would. Yeah, sure would. Let's see. Since we were talking about it, I'll play White Man's World for you.
I'm a white man living in a white man's world. Under our roof is a baby girl. Thought this world could be hers one day, but her mama knew better. I'm a white man living in a white man's town. I wanna take a shot of cocaine and burn it down. Mama wanna change that Nashville sound, but they're never gonna let her. There's no such thing as someone else's war. Your creature comforts aren't the only things worth fighting for. Still breathing, it's not too late. We're all carrying one great burden, sharing one fate. I'm a white man living on a white man's street. I got the bones of the red man under my feet. And the highway runs through the burial ground, past the oceans of cotton. I'm a white man looking in a black man's eyes. I'm wishing I'd never been one of the guys who pretended not to hear another white man's joke. Old times ain't forgotten. There's no such thing as someone else's war. Your creature comforts aren't the only things worth fighting for. You're still breathing, it's not too late. We're all carrying one great burden, sharing. Upstairs must have took a vacation. I still have faith, but I don't know why. Maybe it's the fire in our little girl's eyes. Maybe it's the fire in our little girl's eyes.
White Man's World by Jason Isbell on Sound Opinions. Wow, powerful stuff, Jason.
Thank you, thank you.
I was thinking while listening to that, and ever since you said it a couple of minutes ago, about this notion of all of us have been in the barroom at the party and somebody says something inappropriate to women or to African Americans, and our silence is complicity.
It
correct?
Is, yeah.
But I'm also wondering about if we spoke up every time. I don't know, brother, you wouldn't have lived to make six solo
point.
Albums.
That's a good
or your nose would have a lot more cracks in it from having been broken, right?
Yeah.
You
that's
know,
a good point.
You know, when do we fight?
That's a good question. I mean, I think you have to try to pinpoint the point of diminishing returns, you know. And I think it's that way in my position when, you know, I have a little bit of an audience out in the world. You have to figure out how much before they turn off, you know, how much before they flip that switch and stop
and
listening
to underscore, you know, in the last couple of years, for a guy who came from where, you know, Greg and I did, the 150 capacity club, you know, drive-by truckers early on, all those years of slogging across America, and you're now playing to crowds of 10 to 15,000 fairly regularly. You know, you got Grammys and stuff. You got something to lose.
Right. Yeah, but that's not how you lose it, though, you know? I mean, it's a lot of people, when they heard this record, I won't say a lot of people, but some people, when they heard this record the first time, people who don't, you know, feel the same way that I do, politically, for lack of a better term, said, you know, he's going to alienate half of his audience. And that number is pulled out of absolutely nowhere.
It's fake news, it's, Jason.
That is actually fake news. That is a statistic that makes zero sense to me because, I mean, they've not done the research to see how my audience is divided. And they also can't predict the future. And first of all, I think if the songs are good enough, people will hang in there with you. And that's where you get them. If the songs are really great and the record makes them really happy, they will put up with being argued with every once in a while because they love the record so much.
I get out of this hole, I'm going to Tupelo. There's a girl down there that'll treat me fair. Get about a week of spring and the summer is blistering. There ain't no one from here that'll follow me there.
But at the same time, I don't think my audience has ever been split right down the middle, you know. I might have lost 8% or 10% or 12%, but I picked up so many new people along the way, you know, by other people telling them, hey, here's a country singer who speaks his mind and kind of agrees with us on certain things. And that made up, you know, tenfold for the number of fans I may have lost otherwise. Mm-hmm. Plus, you know, I don't want to wind up in a room with a bunch of people who aren't anything like me. I would rather be in a small room full of people who could all get along than a huge, gigantic room full of people who I felt like I was fraudulently selling them a product. You know, I don't want to be up on stage singing to an audience that disagrees with me on most of the things that I believe in. I just don't want to do that.
What you're saying, Jason, really reminds me, because you grew up in northern Alabama, which is obviously the home of that great Muscle Shoals studio and Fame Studios, where you did some work in your early days. Jimmy Johnson, the great guitar player in that Muscle Shoals group, you know, I asked him once why, and they were doing these integrated records, you know, you, often black singers accompanied by this white rhythm section, the great Muscle Shoals guys. And I said, why did the KKK, you know, why didn't the supremacists come around and give you guys a harder time for making these records right in the middle of, you know, because I would talk to some of the black artists who went there, and they were like, whoa, we kind of didn't realize what we were stepping into here.
Right.
But it worked out great. And he said, I think they like the music.
Yeah, how about that?
He said
that?
The music sort of broke down that barrier in some ways. It's like what you're saying, you know, if the music's good enough, you know, maybe that's the one crack in the armor where you can actually speak to that audience and bring two sides together that otherwise wouldn't have had a reason to speak to each other.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, when I was a kid, you know, I didn't know a whole lot about other cultures, and I heard Otis Redding and Aretha Franklin, and I thought, well, some of the kids that I'm going to school with must be wrong about something, because whatever Otis Redding and Aretha Franklin had, you know, I was drawn to it and very much attracted to it in a way where it sort of became, it consumed me, you know, like it does a lot of people who get into that kind of music for the first time.
And as long as we're together, baby, show some respect for me. If you wanna
And through that, you know, even though I didn't go to school with any black kids or I didn't really know any black people in my community, you know, I got my first taste of the idea that we're not all that different, you know, and things that move a white person's heart are the same thing that move a black person's heart. And when the art that comes out of that is so, so good, you know, even dumb little redneck kids like me couldn't ignore the fact that, you know, there was something really beautiful about it.
After the break, more with Jason Isbell. We'll talk about songwriting, sobriety, and vampires. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX.